Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game, 1 o'clock hour. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick sticking around a little while longer. Derek Mason here with you. Nick Kieser, intern Connor behind the glass. We'll say hello to Mitch Light of The Athletic. Mitch, how are you?
I'm good. I got a question, Chase. Not to, you know, tell you guys how to do your job there. Like, what's the cutoff for notoriety? I understand why you introduced Derek Mason as former NFL wide receiver. But does Willie Donickett, former minor league baseball player, former two-sport SEC athlete? I mean, come on, Willie.
We've discussed this. I don't know what mine was.
Not very long, I guess.
No, we have. This has come up. This is not the first time. So I think we're going to have to redo the open because Derek would like his other accolades to be mentioned. That he's
my spelling bee. I won a spelling bee. Well, I came in second in spelling bee in the fifth grade. I want that to be mentioned.
That he's a record holder at Mumford High School.
Exactly.
You all American.
What do you got? Like, Chase, what can we do for you? Like, tight end and high school, you know, left right tackle?
Hey, I was the MVP actually my senior year as the manager. So I was the most valuable person.
There you go. When I come on your show, I want to feel like I'm going on with big time people, not just one former NFL player.
I'm the mayor.
Athlete, a minor league baseball player, a manager.
I'm the mayor of the friend zone. So, you know, there's that.
Are there term limits for that, or is that
apparently not. I keep thinking there might be, but apparently not.
There's no limit. There's no limit, Mitch.
Just when I think I've escaped.
It's infinity.
Throw him right back in.
Okay, I didn't mean to hijack the segment. My buddy Willie's done some good things. Athletic career, so I just want some support for Willie.
You're talking to Willie. He's in the Czech Republic right now, so it's pretty cool.
I know. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I'm jealous. Sounds like a great trip.
I'm writing the script. Mitch, I'm writing the script for the new promo right now as we speak. I'm not writing it in Czech, but I'm working on it. So when I get home, we're going to have this all ready for your next segment.
Okay, maybe like gave up like 8 earned runs in Vanderbilt's like 25-22 loss to Michigan State in baseball in
93. We lost 21-17. We lost 21-17 to Michigan State, and I was the starting pitcher. I think when I left the game, we were down 10-1.
didn't have your A game that day, the good stuff?
No, I didn't. I did not have my A game. It was the same day that Vanderbilt basketball beat Illinois to advance to the Sweet 16. Ooh. So it was a good day for Vanderbilt athletics on the hardwood. It was not a good day at the baseball yard.
Well, that's sort of like a Friday news dump in the world. Like, just that's a good one.
Yeah.
With 99.9% of the Vanderbilt fans were focused on another game. So,
okay, correct. So Mitch, let's get into what I think is going to happen here in college football.
Oh,
but
okay.
But I'm gonna ask you this question first. Next season, who will be the head coach at Texas A&M?
Oh, Jimbo Fisher.
I disagree. I think they're going to buy him out.
Stunned.
It's not working.
How large is the buyout? Do you know, Mitch?
Well, there's no buyout. It's guaranteed. So whatever's left on it, $80 million. I think it was whatever. It's in the 70, 80, 90 million range. Here's what I think would happen first. He will be asked, forced, whatever, to hire an offensive coordinator. And he will revamp his offense. And if that doesn't work after a year or two, then I think you are getting into that range. Because, I understand where you're coming from, Chase, and I'm not making excuses for them. They're worse than they should be. They're inexplicably bad on offense. But with all the notoriety they've gotten from recruiting and stuff, like this great class, especially all those defensive players, they're true freshmen. And the five-star quarterback, Connor Wegman, was a true freshman this year. I think next year was always going to be the year for that potential breakthrough. But I really do think he needs to hire an offensive coordinator. And, you know, people have documented this, written stories about it, and his quarterback evaluation has been poor, you know, basically since Jameis Winston. Yeah, it's just not – it's not – just sometimes the guys are highly recruited, sometimes they're not highly recruited, but you don't need a highly recruited quarterback to be effective in college football. You just need a good quarterback who runs your system well, and whether your system's antiquated or just not got the right quarterback. But I would be shocked if he's not the coach there next year.
Vanderbilt's got to play Ole Miss this week, and you look at Ole Miss right now, the Lane train is running full throttle at 5-0. They beat Kentucky, a close game. Kentucky kind of shot themselves in the foot, but Lane has that as a top 10 program once again. One, do you think Ole Miss is for real? And two, how can Lane parlay this into something, even though, you know, they kept him last year after it looked like he could be leaving and going to another job?
Yeah, they deserve their ranking. And kind of before the season, and we said it in the first few weeks, it looked like there were three elite teams, and then maybe we want to throw Clemson into that mix now. But I think in that 5 to 10 to 12 range, you have to rank teams at certain spots based on their performance. So I'd say Ole Miss deserves its ranking. Are they what we think of with a top 10 team? I don't know. You know, they weren't really tested until Saturday and played well, but Kentucky, from a Kentucky standpoint, you could look at that and say, man, they blew it. You know, Will Levis just did not protect the ball in key moments there. Very entertaining game, and it's just one of those examples of the fine line between winning and losing one play. So, you know, does Lane Kiffin want to go to a place where he can win a national championship? I think he probably does. You know, Ole Miss fans might disagree, but I don't think that would happen at Ole Miss. I think he can have a consistent top 10, top 15 program there. He has said all the right things about Ole Miss, and I just, from the outside looking in, it seems like he is much more mature, much more hireable from a quote-unquote big-time national championship contending job. So, you know, does he look at Auburn as a place like that? I think Auburn, you can win a national championship because they have won a national championship. They played for a national championship, you know, as recently as 2013. So, you know, where he goes from here, I don't know, but he has done a much better job than I thought he would do at Ole Miss. That's for sure.
Yeah, I feel like every day I have to Google Brian Harsin to see if he's still the head coach at Auburn, but I think so far he still is. Before I turn this over to Derek, was the Missouri scare for Georgia just that, a scare, maybe an off week, or are they showing some weaknesses?
I don't know. I mean, we're going to find out. I know that's a boring answer, but, you know, it was Seth Emerson, our Georgia writer at The Athletic, wrote about it this morning. Maybe it was too much too soon or too good too soon for Georgia, and they just thought it was going to be as easy all season. The reason I say I'm not sure is because there's nothing fluky about that game. Like, sure, both teams had to settle for field goals, so maybe one team could have asserted itself more. But, like, I was only kind of sort of half-watching because I was doing some work, but I had it on my main screen there. And I thought Missouri, like, if you didn't know who was who, and, you know, you would think Missouri was a top-10 team, too, based on that game. They looked athletic. They looked quick. They controlled part of the line of scrimmage on both sides for parts of the game there. Georgia's a little banged up there, so, you know, I think Auburn's good enough this week to get Georgia's attention. So I think we'll find out about this Georgia team. If they come out like they did the South Carolina game and they're up 21-0 the first quarter, you say, okay, maybe that was just a wake-up call. But if they struggle, especially at the line of scrimmage, you can say, hey, you know, they're probably still a great team, but pump the brakes on this. They're even better than last year talk.
We're talking with Mitch Light of The Athletic. Now, the big game this weekend, obviously, UT – LSU. It's weird that it's an 11 o'clock kickoff.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Stupid.
That game. Yeah, you're talking about two top 25 teams, one at 8 and the other at 25, and you're putting them on at 11 o'clock in the morning. But, you know, that it is what it is. Now, what
it's
type
a night
of,
game in Prague, guys. It's a night game.
Well, it's a night game for Willie. Absolutely. How do you expect this game to go? Because LSU, they lost the first game of the season. And then this previous game, it was a tight game versus Auburn. Tennessee has played well. I don't think I think they will be without Tillman again, but they got a lot of other pass catchers. But no one liked Tillman, so that'd be a big blow for them. But how do you think this game will go?
Yeah, first on the TV part, you know, ESPN's always had the kind of an 11 o'clock game as being a pretty good SEC game. But I think a lot of that's also the reaction to the Big Noon Saturday on Fox. You know, Fox has 2-3 years ago, or maybe 4 years ago, moved its prime game to noon because that was kind of the window they thought they could, quote-unquote, steal. And it's worked. If you look at the ratings, some of the most heavily watched games in college football the past few years have been those Fox noon games, noon Eastern. So I think this is part of ESPN. Like, we saw the Ole Miss-Kentucky game last week at 11. I think not every week, but I think ESPN's going to start, has and looking to put maybe the second best game of the week after that CBS game in that 11 a.m. Central window instead of at night to kind of battle that noon game. But specifically to this game, I think this is a very good matchup for Tennessee because of the strengths and weaknesses of LSU. Like, you could look at it and say, okay, LSU on the road, that's a tough matchup, always is. Sure, the crowd, even 11, is going to be great there. But I think what Tennessee doesn't do well is not something that LSU does well. Like, Tennessee has struggled against the pass. And, you know, Florida was a team we didn't really think could throw the ball, and they threw it, 400 yards or whatever it was last week. LSU has not been good throwing the ball. They had like 200 against Florida State, like 200 against Mississippi State, and really struggled against Auburn. I think under 100 yards against Auburn. So I just don't see that LSU offense being able to keep up with the Tennessee offense. And you're not going to hold this Tennessee team to under – I don't think you're going to hold them under 31 points, and I don't see LSU scoring that much. So I really think this is, you know, if you line up the talent on the rosters, maybe LSU, because it's LSU still has more overall talent, but I think Tennessee's a better team, and I think this is a favorable matchup for Tennessee.
Now, Alabama fans were holding their breath last week, and no one, they thought, you know, Bryce Young had tore, you know, a rotator cuff or something, and he would be out the season. Now, obviously, it isn't that way, but he will be out. But just say if he wasn't, if he had to be out an extended amount of time, how do you think Alabama reacts to that? Do you think they still would be contending for a national championship?
I think last year they were built more. For as great as Bryce Young was last year and won the Heisman Trophy, they had such good weapons on the outside that they did not need as good quarterback play. So I think, like, if they had the weapons on the outside this year that they did, that Jalen Milroe, the backup, or even Tyler Simpson, the freshman from Martin, Tennessee, could keep that offense humming. My concern for Alabama, if they are forced to go with Milroe the rest of the way, would be, do they have enough on the outside to help him? Could they win a lot of games? Sure. But when they got to the playoff, let's say, or if they got to the SEC championship game against Georgia, could they threaten you vertically enough? And I haven't seen enough of Milroe to know that. So I think it was kind of like stunned a little bit after the injury, and it showed with Arkansas coming back. But they kind of righted the ship, and Milroe's obviously a good player. He was committed to Texas at one point, I believe, and you know, they have faith in him. He's number two on the depth chart ahead of a five-star freshman. But you know, hopefully for Alabama, they won't have to answer that question long term. But I definitely think it would hurt them more this year because they don't have those weapons on the outside.
Willie,
Mitch, I got one for you. You know, Clark Lee tries to build something at Vanderbilt. You always look at programs that have been absolutely at the bottom that are doing some things. How is Kansas 5-0?
That's a great question. I mean, you know, Lance Leipold has done a great job, and I think you guys probably know this, the what-ifs of the world. You know, Lance Leipold was the number two choice at Vanderbilt. You know, they interviewed him at his home in Buffalo, I believe, and then chose Clark Lee the next day. Now, I don't care how good Lance Leipold is at Kansas, and I've followed his career since he came from, like, Wisconsin Whitewater. I think Clark Lee was the choice for Vanderbilt, you know, an alum, all that stuff. We don't need to revisit that. But he is a great coach, and he did, you know, won like five national championships in 8 years, Division III, turned a really bad Buffalo program around. They struck gold with the quarterback, who was, I don't know if you guys have talked about it, but he was an NTSU commit until signing day. And he flipped to Kansas, I think in the class of 2021, so he's a second-year player. His name escapes me now. We've written a lot about him at The Athletic. But he's very good. I mean, he's legit, dual threat. And they just, you saw them getting better last year. And there's a belief there. I'd like to sit here and say, because, you know, I follow recruiting so closely, oh, they're one of these programs that's recruited well and they just need the right coach. No, they really haven't. I mean, the recruiting rankings have been horrible. They hit the portal heavily, but it's not like they were getting great guys there. It's just, it's the right mix. The teams they beat, I'm not taking anything away from them, but West Virginia, not as good as we thought. Houston, clearly not as good as we thought. Then they won two home games against solid programs, but they're not exactly battling an upper-tier SEC gauntlet. So, great accomplishment, but if you step back, I mean, it's great accomplishment because they've been so bad. If you step back, the teams they've beaten haven't been great. So, but it is no doubt a great story in college football.
Mitch, appreciate the time as always. Going to be another fun week of college football, and we'll work on that show open for you. So we'll hopefully have it done soon.
Yeah, I'm around if you need to bounce some ideas off of, so just let me know.
Absolutely. Mitch Light of The Athletic joining us every Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Coming up next, it's trivia time. We'll talk to Clark Lee at the bottom of the hour. But first, Willie, tell us about Lee Company.
All right. And now that Derek knows I'm 0-1 against Michigan State, can't use that as the trivia question for 0-1 on the mound against the Spartans. But let me tell you about Lee Company. They're a great sponsor of the Nashville Predators. And in fact, there are a few sponsors on our trip, and one of them, Jerry Vance, a guy that I've gotten to know. I got to play golf with him years ago, and our daughters played some soccer together. He is a great representative of Lee Company, and they're here to support the Predators. It's outstanding. Lee Company does some great work on a lot of different fronts, home maintenance, and of course, their bread and butter. So let's start with that. We have our service through Lee Company at our house, our air conditioning, our heating system, and we get those annual checkups every year. That's part of their home maintenance plan. I think that's the way to go. We invest long term. You have that small monthly fee, but you get the annual checkups for free, and then you get the discounts when repairs are needed over the long haul. You're going to need some repairs here and there. So that's the service, the preventive maintenance from Lee Company. Those checkups really are going to save you money over the long term. So Lee Company, they've been an outstanding operation. Give them a call, 615-567-1000. That's 615-567-1000, or go to LeeCompany.com. Lee Company, proud sponsor, Nashville Predators.
A little more Loretta Lynn bringing us back. Chase Willie and D-Mace, 1025-1063 the game. Nick listens to me because I tell him do instrumentals. But, you know, for this, you can let her sing. It's okay. But good job. Willie in Prague, Chase and Derek back here. And it's time for trivia on the line. A pair of tickets to see Smashing Pumpkins and Jane's Addiction at Bridgestone Arena on Monday, October 10th. Very, very good prize on the line. You must participate.
Yeah.
615-737-1025. 615-737-1025 is the number. So call in, and you can tell Nick your answer. We'll do this off the air because we've got to get to Clark Lee coming up here in just a few minutes. But here's the question. I got it today. All right. So yesterday during the broadcast, watched Willie and Mace and everybody, and there were a few NHL legends that were in the crowd. Obviously, one of them was Pekka with his family. But the other was the original Forsberg for the Nashville Predators, Peter Forsberg, who played about 20-21 games with the Preds in the 2007 season. He was acquired on February 15th, 2007 from the Philadelphia Flyers. The Predators gave up a first-round pick and a third-round pick and two players. Who were the two players that the Predators gave up to acquire Peter Forsberg? That is the question for today. You like that one, Willie?
I like it. I know exactly where I was when that trade went down. I was in a hotel with the team in St. Louis when that went down. So that was a big, big moment, trading for a legend like Peter Forsberg. And I'll tell you what, he was so great. He was sitting with a lot of the Predator people last night, and everybody told me the same thing. He was incredibly gracious to everybody that went up and wanted his autograph or a picture or just a word with him. He was extremely accommodating. He's got one of the best presence. You know, when you're in near greatness, he just has that aura about him. He's one of those guys. They called him last night, they were calling him the 1%. He's in that 1%, right, of those big-time athletes. That's Peter Forsberg. So that was a very historic day. And I got to say, guys, we are way across the board, right? We just played Loretta Lynn because of the obvious, you know, the sadness of her passing at age 90. And then we're giving away tickets to Smashing Pumpkins. So we've got the whole spectrum covered here, I think.
Did you know, I learned this when I was looking up some things for this question. So, again, what two players did the Predators give up to the Philadelphia Flyers in the Peter Forsberg trade in 2007? It was two roster players and then a first and third round pick given up for Forsberg. But something that I didn't, I guess I never knew, because I always knew Forsberg with the Quebec Nordiques and then the Colorado Avalanche. The Flyers traded him twice in his career.
Hmm.
You remember that, Willie?
They traded him twice?
He was a part of the Eric Lindros trade.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's I had forgotten that. Yeah, he was the prize of the blockbuster Eric Lindros draft age.
Yep. Yep. So he was a part of that with Ron Hextall. And
for the most part when he was traded there.
It was five players total. All right, do we have a winner? We do have a winner. All right.
Winner, chicken dinner.
Willie, I know you knew the answer.
Yes. In fact, I got a retweet. I've been getting so many great retweets for my clip of Roman Josi. I just happened to capture that moment last night, which is one of the coolest things that you'll see. And if you haven't seen it, you ought to check it out. But Scotty Upshaw retweeted my clip. So it was good to see Scotty. And then you got to help me. The defenseman is Ryan, and I don't know why I can't remember his last name.
Ryan Parent.
Ryan Parent. Yeah, Ryan Parent. He was traded a couple times as well. I think the Predators may have gotten him back at some point, but he never really stuck. He was a first-round draft pick, one of the few first-round picks for defensemen that really didn't pan out for Nashville.
Yep, so the answer was Scotty Upshaw and Ryan Parent, and then the two draft picks. And the rumor out there always was if there was a that the Flyers wanted another pick, and if the Predators had given another pick, that Claude Giroux would have come back the other way too. So that could have been interesting if that had happened. But
I've never gotten
David Poile to tell me that was true or not.
I'll have to try to find out about that. I had not heard that, to be honest with you. That's when did you hear that, Chase? Why didn't you tell me? I don't think I've ever heard that rumor.
I don't know. I heard it a long time ago.
Okay. Well, we need to do an investigation. We do.
We'll have to ask. The first time we have David on, I'll bring that up, and he can tell me if it was true or not. That could be fun.
Okay.
So congratulations to Mike. He is our winner. He will be seeing the Smashing Pumpkins coming up Monday. Willie, you going to try and stick around through Clark Lee?
Yeah, I'll listen in. You guys can carry the bulk of the interview, but I definitely watched their game from start to finish against Alabama, so I'm raring to go. And look, I got nothing to do. I blocked it off. I've missed you guys.
Yeah, well,
thank you,
we've missed you as well. Coming up next, we'll talk to Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee, but first, D-Mace is going to tell us about BetUS.
Absolutely, and listen. Monday Night Football finished up yesterday. We got basketball. NBA is going on. I watched the New Jersey Nets play last night. The Brooklyn Nets, excuse me. And the LA Lakers. Watched them both. So you can start getting your bets going when it comes to the NBA. And what better place to go get those bets than BetUS.com, which is back for its 28th year of NFL action with the industry's biggest sign-up bonus of up to 200%. BetUS offers their members the opportunity to cash in on all their favorite leagues, including the NFL, NBA, which I just spoke of, MLB, and more. Congratulations to the Braves for winning that weekend series. Sorry, Willie. They've also got hundreds of new casino games, including the coolest European slots, and their live dealers are waiting for you at the tables. You need a sportbook with integrity and longevity, and you need to know that you will be getting paid. You need a sportbook that offers everything, including live betting, MMA, golf, horse racing, esports, and all kinds of crazy bets. Call today at 1-800-79-BETUS. That's 1-800-79-BETUS, and they will walk you through setting up your account. Nobody in the industry, and I mean no one, gives better bonuses than BETUS. Join now. Mention 1025, yes, the best sports show in town, and you can get up to 200% in bonuses on your first deposit. Nobody beats that. So head on over to BETUS.com and join today. That's BETUS, where the games begin.
Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Derek Mason, Willie Donick here with you. We say hello to Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee, who is on the line with us after the off week. Coach, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic. How did you spend the first off week of the season? for your team. I know Alabama was a tough one, but what did you and your staff discuss and your team discuss and do during the off week?
Well, we quickly usually we have Sunday off, but Sunday we came in after the game and really kind of dove into the learning and put that one behind us. That's important. I mean, it was painful and something that we obviously were very disappointed, but we got to keep our focus on the mission and that, those experiences are hard, but they're part of our journey and, we need to learn from them and grow from them. But also not let them snowball and not let them kind of penetrate that belief and that vision that we have that defines us. So we did that Sunday, and then Monday, the coaches headed out on the road. I was in Memphis to speak with the Memphis Touchdown Club, and then I was in Austin and then Dallas on Tuesday. We were out recruiting. The players were here training. We came back together on Wednesday had a great practice. Wednesday afternoon, I went with Candace and Stack and Corbs and some others, and we had a little event in Houston, which was cool. We got to go to the Astros game, and it was time well spent. Thursday and Friday mornings, more practice, and then the guys got Saturday and Sunday off. So our freshmen that stayed in town came out to the house on Saturday. We hung out, had a good time just watching some football and relaxing, and that was it. That was the weekend. Back at it here on Monday.
As you continue to build on things and look at your team, we've talked to you a lot about A.J. Swan taking over at quarterback. I feel like I'll probably ask you this every week, but what are you seeing week to week, whether it's in the game or on the practice field, as he develops as a passer?
Well, the time and space were at a premium against Alabama, and I think, there's both design elements that we can improve upon and then also just execution elements. But I do think that he when we got in rhythm, he had chemistry with Will Shepard, which was good to see, and they were able to connect on some one-on-one balls that at times even were double covered, and I think that's going to bode well for us moving forward. He doesn't get rattled by environment. He doesn't get rattled by situation. We need to play better offensively. We need to play better as a team, but we will. We have trust and confidence in our group. Obviously, we ran up against a good team and didn't have our best effort in Tuscaloosa, but every time AJ's out there and he's taking a snap, he's learning, he's growing, and we have a lot of belief in both his ability now, but also his potential as he grows.
We're talking with Vanderbilt's head football coach, Clark Lee. Now, Coach, during the bye week, headed into the bye week, from my experience, you try to go in and, one, you try to get guys healthy. That's the most important, getting guys that were probably dinged and nicked up, getting them healthy for the next following game. But then trying to, depending on how your season going, even if it's great, you're trying to figure out, okay, how can we improve as a team? What are some things that we do good? What are some things that we can improve on? Or what are some things that we just need to throw out? With all that being said, are there things that you look at your team and say, okay, this is what we're great at. This is some things we need to improve. And this at this point in time, we need to sort of take it out and stick with what we got now.
Well, certainly. To your first point, the bye week was absolutely about getting rejuvenated, and we were able to do that. And so, a portion of that practice is spent with kind of guys that haven't played as many reps, getting reps, where the guys that have played a lot and have higher load numbers, are just more straight line conditioning. I'm excited to going into this weekend to have, access to more of our roster. It's exciting to see guys like Quincy Skinner back, and the opportunity to see our offensive line closer to full strength, and getting some defensive line depth back with Braden Babs practicing this week. So you know, there's a lot that came out of that bye week that's positive for us. As far as just addressing, you know, kind of the learning from the season to this point, you know, like the first thing I think about on defense is, like, our perimeter play, and specifically at the corner position. You know, we have good players out there that need to just ingrain in a process, you know, that both eye progression, fundamental technical process, that, you know, will allow them to take space earlier in the down. You know this, mm-hmm. but, I mean, look, there's nothing better than catching a stop route or receiver and being able to turn up and get vertical. You know, we need to be able to close that space while the ball travels and make a physical tackle, because it doesn't matter to me if it's first and 10, second and 4, you know, defensively, if the offense is on schedule. If we've squared that route up, eventually they'll grow tired of throwing it. We've just allowed too many plays to bleed out, and so really dialing into the fundamental techniques, the eye progression that allow for us to take that space. And you know, in this case, less is more. So it's not about becoming more complex. It's about really honing in on the things that matter the most and doing those things well. Offensively, you know, it's about, you know, how do we continue to create and generate space? You know, using formations, using shifts and motions, using our personnel to their strengths. You know, and again, I think there's room for us to grow in that respect. And so we've taken time on that. The other thing, too, just to point out is when you're playing a lot of young players, we can't afford to sit back and let development happen. You know, we have to have a developmental focus every day. And so we've shifted some practice elements around with the idea that, you know, changing our process and practice will help us grow our team a little more in practice, a little more good on good work, you know, a little more in terms of just individual time early, and all that will benefit us as we move forward, and you know, in hopes that we're hitting, you know, our stride as we reach the kind of the teeth of our season.
Vanderbilt coach Clark Lee is on the line with us, and coach, I was watching the Alabama game, and I was curious just to see. I know as a coach, you know, there's a point in time in the game where you're not going to win the game, but I'm sure you're really watching closely to see who's competing, what you can learn about some of your players as the game goes along, no matter what the score is, really. So what did you think you learned about your team as you watched that up against, you know, where the bar is set so high?
Well, we certainly, from a competitive mindset standpoint, didn't flinch. It wasn't the environment that hampered our performance. I felt like there was a focus. The movement on the field was intentional. You know, we have to win one-on-ones in pass rush. We have to shorten downs. We have to create space offensively. And, you know, there's a fourth and one snap. There's a third down snap early where, you know, a blitzing linebacker penetrates the backfield, and you know, we got to slip the combination, you know, a split second sooner, because that allows us to pick up that pressure and again get the necessary yards to gain to get the first down. The fourth and one snap there in the second quarter, where, you know, that's a play we're going to convert, and so it's finding the inches in those moments to keep the ball in play offensively, to sustain drives, and there's a benefit obviously to the offense as we finish drives with points, but there's also a benefit to the defense as you limit exposure. So I never felt like the stage was too big. I never felt like there was a lack of competitive fight or fire. And I really want to move beyond that as a conversation point, because this team, since about midway through last season, this program has demonstrated a fight and a willingness to stay in the fight. You know, our focus now is on, you know, how we execute our strategies better, how we design our strategies better as a coaching staff to put ourselves in the best position to win games. And you know, that's where our minds are. We're not celebrating the fact that we keep competing for four quarters. I was disappointed by the last score, because, you know, that should never end up in the end zone. But that those are tackling fundamentals. That's not a lack of effort. That's a lack of finishing a tackle. And, you know, those are things that we can improve upon.
Coach, we may have made history with you because Willie just asked you that question from the Czech Republic. So, as he's there.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I was wondering. How do I get to the Czech Republic? That's the next question.
Willie, help him out.
Is that where this Landshark bar at the Margaritaville is? I was like, where is this place, and why have I not been there yet? That sounds like an incredible spot. Maybe I'll visit in retirement.
Yeah, I am just about to explore it myself here because we just arrived. But we did see from the airport, we saw a McDonald's, a KFC, and a Starbucks. So they do have some of the chains so far. I'm hoping to explore some more local stuff here before it's all over.
Give me a report on the local stuff, because eventually I'm going to be heading over that way, and my wife and I will need some good spots, Willie. So,
okay, you got it. You got it.
Coach,
full report coming.
Thanks, as always, for the time, and best of luck this weekend against Ole Miss.
Appreciate you guys. Y'all take care. Mm-hmm.
That is Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, joining us here on the show. Coming up next, I saw something last night that made me laugh a little bit, and I will tell you what that is. Coming up next, Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
And here comes a stoppage in play because someone has run on the field with a smoke bomb that is pink, and he's running up the sideline. Now a couple of Rams come over there and make the tackle. Head first into the player who has taken the field, and he's in a cloud of pink smoke so you can't see him, and now on him are a couple of security guards.
Kevin, I think this is becoming a thing. We got the pink smoke coming again. This is one of those gender reveals. Somebody at home's having a girl.
That's how it sounded on Westwood One. Kevin Harlan once again. Fantastic job doing the call of a fan running out on the field. Chase Willie and D-Mace back here, 102.5, 106.3, the game. So I'm watching this on the Manning cast, actually, last night. And, you know, I love the Manning cast, and they had a good one last night. And all of a sudden you hear Peyton go, "We got a streaker on the field. Hang on, can I get the replay of that?" And Eli's like, what? Like, what are you talking about? And, you know, generally they don't show it.
Yeah.
They cut away. But obviously they had the cameras and stuff. And I kind of have a feeling ESPN was hesitant, but they end up showing it. Here was the breakdown, Peyton and Eli, of not a streaker, but the guy with the gender reveal on the field.
We got a visitor on the field here. Can we rewind that? Eli, can you do the tablet on this streaker on the field? No? Can I do it on the big board?
Yeah, you got to break down his move.
I don't know if he's naked right now, but I think at some point he had no clothes on. He was running a post route right across the 50, and a security guard took him out. But a nice hit, though, right? It was a nice legal hit. Yeah, I thought we could show that. Yeah, I understand.
I think we could. You know, yeah, they don't want to talk about it.
I understand
it.
The A team couldn't show it, but the B team, like, we should be able to show that.
Okay, that's why. Here we go. Oh, yeah.
There he is. Not, yes.
Oh, yes.
That's what we're talking
Wagner.
About. Wagner.
Bobby.
A veteran, right? Get him down. Now get out and tackle. Let these guys take over. Oh, Bobby Wagner. Veteran play.
That was amazing. So Bobby Wagner knocked him. I mean, got him good. Yeah. There was two players coming off the Rams sideline.
Fourth down.
But Wagner got him. And I was just, Willie, I was just saying to Derek that if I'm a player and somebody runs out on the field, you best believe I'm going full tilt to take him down. Like, you're in my house.
Yeah, you came in my backyard.
Yeah.
Yeah. No question. You're lighting that guy up, and you're going to enjoy doing it. And I think you should know, if you want to pull that stunt and get on the field, that you're going to pay a price. But okay. I got to tell you, the guy that got me, and they didn't mention this, they got to get more speed in the lineup in the security guards.
Yeah.
That guy was struggling.
There's no speed.
Not gonna catch
There's no speed.
The guy. The guy in the yellow shirt, he couldn't change directions. He needs to get some cleats. He doesn't have the right ability, man. He was never gonna catch that guy.
Hey, they need to update their speed, man. They gotta do something. You know? Right now they lack
need to get like a host of like 12 people.
They lack deep speed. They don't have any speed. Well, they don't have any short space speed either.
See, I think this is how you could make your return. We just have you suited up on the sideline, mm-hmm. like in your number 85 and, you know, full pads and everything. Somebody runs out on the field, you go after him. You take him out.
I'm trying to think. I probably, if he like ran close to me, I would go out there and tackle the person.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care who it was. I'd tackle him. Just like, because that's for me, that's my one time to just level somebody without getting a penalty.
Well, so. I love what Wagner did. That was fantastic. So, yeah, apparently this was like some gender reveal, and you heard it, the radio call, they're saying like, well, somebody at home's having a girl while the dad's spending night in jail or whoever. I don't know if it was the dad or not.
But. Man, well, I wonder how he got in with it. First,
it makes me wonder if it was an inside job.
Yeah, like somebody that knew somebody.
Knew somebody and was like, "Look, we'll take care of you. Go ahead and do it." That's
yeah.
Fine.
That had to be an inside
now,
deal.
Now, I would imagine Bobby Wagner taking you out was probably not a part of the equation. But you do kind of wonder. So it was pretty funny. Something that I saw this weekend, Willie, that just made me so happy was the Atlanta Braves baseball club sweeping your Mets. Your thoughts?
Oh, man. I was waiting on
man.
This
way. I watched the first game on Friday at the arena, getting ready to get on the buses and head to the airport. And so, you know, at the end of the first game, you're thinking, okay, they battled. It's not the end of the world. It's tied. Really, the Mets just needed to win one game because they would have at least controlled their own destiny going into this last series. And then, thankfully, the game was played, you know, at 1:10 in the morning in Bern. So I didn't watch either of the next two games. But you talk about waking up and just not feeling real good. You know, I was looking for texts or tweets from people saying, hey, they did it. Hey, this did it. And instead, I get a lot of heckling from different people saying, hey, what was the score of the Mets game last night? Did you happen to see that? So what a nightmare.
Well,
an absolute nightmare.
I started to bring
it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I started to bring it up to Teron earlier at the end of his segment. I said, hey, Willie's not here. So, you know, how about? And he goes, I'm hanging up.
He didn't want to have any parts of it.
Yeah.
He knew.
There's one of the hockey ops guys on our trip, Jeff Savatsky, he's the other fellow Met fan, and we have been commiserating in Bern, and we just can't believe it. We just kept thinking, we just got to get one, and we didn't get one. And he had a great line. He said, how are the Mets the only team you can feel so lousy when for a team that's won 98 games?
I know. Because you're the Braves have gotten hot at the right time, and you have gotten to not at the right time.
But y'all had to know this was coming. All Met fans had to know this was coming. This was going to be the outcome.
No.
Yes,
no.
Willie. Yeah, Willie, no. Before you left, you were not that confident. You were not confident, Willie.
No. No, I was not confident. But I felt pretty good about getting one. When you have DeGrom and Scherzer and Chris Bassett, who's had a great year, you got to feel good about your chance of getting one game. But the Braves are really a great team. I do think that there's a reason. I don't really look at it as lose this league so light. But I do think with the expanded playoffs, I am curious if there's going to be, whether it's the Mets or somebody else, a team that gets hot, that gets on a momentum ride, kind of like you see in the extended rounds of the NHL playoffs, mm-hmm. since there's more games, and if there's a team that just doesn't play well in the first series that they play. When you add more layers to the playoffs, it's a tougher road, and the best teams don't always win. So we'll have to look to that. But the road is so much tougher when you have to win the wild card series 2 out of 3 and then beat the Dodgers and then probably beat the Braves.
Aaron Judge just flew out as they're in the top of the third. Yankees and Rangers tied at 2. It's the first game of a doubleheader tonight between the Yankees and the Rangers as he chases 62. I don't think he's going to get it. I think he's going to sit at 61.
Man,
They're not throwing him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're making him earn it, and he's struggling.
Well, that's what happens when you're a great hitter.
Yep, no doubt about it. Willie, enjoy your first night in Prague, and we will check in with you tomorrow.
Okay, guys, we will make the plan. I will explore and have a full report tomorrow.
Looking forward to it as well. Stick around. Stillman and Company coming up next as they continue their reaction to the Titans and their victory now at 2-2. What is next for the Two-Tone Blue? That is all next. 102.5, 106.3, the game.
We out.